Those of you who know me or have read any of my books know that I do have a passion for names. And I like to look at the sources of the names. What I've done with this book is I took all of the names that are listed on the features, the lakes, mountains, streams, on the USGS topo maps that are within the National Forest boundaries. And I tried to get down to the basis of it. When you think of names, a lot of times, if you look at a topo map, you're going to see names, and really what they are, for the most part, are just reference tags. They tell you what mountain you're on, or they tell you you're at this lake and not the other lake. But all of those names have a history behind them. Now, the reflections on nature has to do, we have features, particularly the streams and lakes, full of the critters and flowers and trees in the national forest. I mean, we have critters from axolotls to weasels. We have trees from and plants from aspen and alder all the way down to wyethia. I'm not going to talk about those tonight. I'll have to let you leave that for another time. What I want to talk about tonight is the history, because a lot of the names are historical people. We don't know that. All we know is the name when you look at it on a map. But they have a history behind them, they have a story behind them, and that's what I find fascinating. And in addition to the story, I've been digging around through the archives, and I've tried to put a face, get a picture, put a face on these names. The end result, I think, in the book, because you read through it alphabetically, but you end up with a kaleidoscopic history of the land that we call Bozeman's backyard. Not only the plants and animals, but the people that have been there. Now, obviously on the end is James Madison. He was our fourth president. The river was named by Lewis and Clark when Madison was Jefferson's Secretary of State. The river gave rise to the name of the mountain range. Gallatin, the same way. He was the Secretary of the Treasury under Jefferson, and his river gave rise to our mountain range. Jim Bridger, the Bridger Range, he's the only guy who actually was here. And in 1856, he and some other guys trapped down through the Bridger Canyon. And then in 1867, he led a wagon train north off the Oregon Trail that came up to the gold fields. He was allegedly safer than Bozeman's Trail. It was only used once. Came across, went up Flathead Pass, down the Bridger Canyon into the Gallatin Valley, and then over to the goldfields. This is the guy that got me started on the project, and I'd collected names around Big Sky for a long time, and I was up in Helena for 30 years and collected names around there, but this is what got me started on the project. It was Mount Wilson, and I wondered, who in the world was that named for? Well, 2 years ago, the Marriott Corporation announced that they were starting a new hotel in Big Sky, which, by the way, it's going to open in the next couple of months. And in their press release, they said they were going to call the hotel the Wilson because it looked out towards this mountain. And 100 years before, in 1917, Woodrow Wilson had signed the act that formed the National Park Service. That's not the park, but that's the Rangers. And I thought, aha, this is wonderful. Now I have the reason behind the name of Mount Wilson. There's a problem. I have a map from the USGS from one of the early surveys. It's dated in 1895, and on it is Mount Wilson. In 1895, Woodrow was still teaching Greek and Latin to college students out east, and he wasn't even on the national map. Okay, can't be him. Well, maybe it was somebody in the valley, in the canyon. This is Sam Wilson. Sam and Josie started the Buffalo Horn Ranch, which is now the 320. But again, that wasn't until after 1895. It was in about 96 or 97. He did run cattle down in the Taylor Fork before that, but you don't name a mountain after a cowboy. And one of his descendants is still in the Gallatin Canyon and has no idea whatsoever that his family had anything to do with Mount Wilson. So I was stumped, and that's what got me going on digging out some of these mysteries. I was up in the State Historical Archives in Helena, and I found a bound volume of typewritten pages from the Forest Service from the 1920s and early 30s. And in it, Eric White, who was a ranger back then in the 20s, stated unequivocally that the mountain was named for this guy, Lester Wilson. Now, this was corroborated by Grace Bates in her wonderful history of Gallatin County that came out in 1994. But General Wilson was a Civil War hero. He was the head of the 60th New York Infantry, who fought in several of the big battles of the Civil War, and he marched with Sherman on his route to the sea. Lester Wilson was honored to be the general who led the Union troops into Savannah, Georgia, when that city fell. After the war, Lester and his brother came to Bozeman, 1867, and they opened up a dry goods shop. Lester Wilson served Gallatin County as the representative in the territorial legislature in 1868. He was quartermaster general to two different governors. And in 1900, he was listed as one of the progressive men in Montana. He has sort of slipped from our historic knowledge because he was really supplanted by his son, Fred Wilson. And Fred, most of you know, was the great architect in Bozeman during the earlier part of the 20th century, designed many of the big buildings downtown, Wilson Auditorium, where the symphony plays, that was named for him. Wilson, the street that comes from downtown right up by here, was also named for Fred. You're looking skeptical because Mount Wilson only has one L, and Fred and Lester have two. But, you see, back in Washington, D.C., there was somebody who knew how to spell Wilson better than those dumb cowboys out in Montana. So they spelled it with one L. Now, they gave that to the board of geographic names, who rule on the names. They ruled it was one L. That's what it is. It's Mount Wilson with one L, but it was actually named for these guys. Now, orthography in the 19th century was a little bit freewheeling. But this is not, in our mountains, this is not the only example of 19th century autocorrect. There's another fellow, actually there were several different examples, but one that you probably know of pretty well is just southeast of Bozeman is Chestnut Mountain. Okay, and it was named for this guy, Colonel James Chestnut. He was another Union officer. He served in Kansas during the Civil War. 1867, he comes to Bozeman. He built one of the first log buildings in Bozeman. It was on the corner, what is now Broadway and Main. It was called Chestnut Corner. And it was a saloon and meeting rooms and what have you. Now, most all the guys who came to Montana in those days had some sort of a business that kept body and soul together. But most of them all were also prospectors, as was James Chestnut. And in 1886, he found a coal seam just east of town. It's actually not far from the Trail Creek exit on I-90. By the way, you know Trail Creek, why it was called that? Because that was the route from the Emigrant gold fields, which was in Gallatin County at the time, from Emigrant to the county seat in Bozeman, went through up Trail Creek. Anyway, he found this coal seam. It was a very high-grade coal. He supplied coal to Fort Ellis and to the town, and he was fortunate because the Northern Pacific Railroad was coming through right about that time over Bozeman Hill. So he sold coal to the railroad. The railroad hauled his coal to the smelter in Anaconda. Very successful. In the first decade of the 20th century, there was a little town of Chestnut that was named for him and for his mine. There were 1,500 to 2,000 people in the town at that time. We know that the school in 1905 had 132 students. That was a pretty big business for that time for this part of the world. So it had to have a post office. Now, somebody back in Washington, D.C. in the Postal Service knew that Chestnut, the tree, was spelled with a T. So they put a T in it, and that's went to the Board of Geographic Names. That's why our mountain is Chestnut Mountain and not Chestnut. And it was certified, and that's what it is today. By the way, we have no idea what the colonel thought about these changes, but that's what it is. Chestnut Mountain, before it became Chestnut Mountain, was named Frensham Mountain. And William Frensham had a ranch near there. He was elected the sheriff of Gallatin County in 1897. After he served that, he then became the postmaster in Bozeman, and he was postmaster for quite a number of years. This is his son, Rhesus. Rhesus Frensham was the first forest ranger in the Gallatin Canyon. Now, he wasn't the first forest ranger in the Gallatin Forest. That was Michael Langhorne. The Langhorne cabin, however, was up the Hyalite near where Langhorne Campground is now. But Rhesus was down in the canyon. He built the first cabin, ranger cabin, on Stormcastle Creek. He built the first ranger cabin at Cinnamon Creek. He was also involved in several of the stories of the canyon. He's the guy who helped Pete Karst haul all of his junk down to the Coldstream camp that became Karst Camp. And Rhesus was also involved in one of the nastier stories. And one of the nastier stories in the canyon. Now, this is Tom and Mamie Michener. Tom Michener came to Montana as a young child. His father hauled him to the Virginia City Goldfields. As he grew up and in his younger years, he bounced around the goldfields in southwestern Montana doing odd jobs. But in 1889, he and Mamie came and settled in Michener Creek, which is just a little bit south of the Conoco station in Big Sky now. And he ran a dude ranch. Again, the dude ranch was there to put body and soul together, but Michener's real thing was finding gold. And he was absolutely convinced that the Middle Fork was just a wealth of gold. So in 1815-16, he formed the Hercules Dredging Company, sold shares, and he was planning to dredge the Middle Fork from basically where Big Sky Resort is now all the way down to 191. There was a problem, though, because up where the resort is now, and by the way, the resort is built on a place called Levensky Meadows, because Andrew Levensky, who was an old prospector and a Prussian immigrant, had his mine up there. Now, Levensky actually, his cabin was down east of the Gallatin, just a little bit south of the Conoco station. And in that area, there's a Levensky Creek and a Levensky Ridge. By the way, if you go across the dam on the road to Big Sky to the resort, you pass Lake Levinsky. Same guy. Rick Ratz tells me that the pronunciation is actually Levensky. So if you believe Rick, that's what we call it. But Andrew had a mine up there, and he claimed it was full of great riches. And, of course, Michener needed that because that would have been where the mother lode was for all the gold that was supposed to be in the canyon, in the Middle Fork Basin. So two of his partners, Gladstone Stevens and Strauss Miller, went up there and posted the mine because they claimed that Levensky had not proved up, and so it was open for the taking. Well, that didn't sit well with Levensky. There was a big shootout. Levensky's cabin was riddled with bullets, and he shot and killed both Miller and Stevens. Turned himself into the sheriff right away. And the Avant Courier in 1917 was, for several days, was just full of the reports of this trial. Levensky was eventually acquitted on the basis of self-defense and claim jumping. I don't think you can get away with that these days, but that was 1917. Anyway, shortly thereafter, Levensky disappeared. And there have been all sorts of rumors about what happened to him. In fact, the Bozeman Chronicle printed an article about 3 years ago touting this mystery. Some people thought he was shot and killed and the body stuffed in a prospect hole. Other people claim that they saw Tom Michener riding out of the Middle Fork with a pack horse, and on the back was a bundle that could have been a body. But actually, the answer really came from Rhesus Frensham, because in his Forest Service notes that year, he noted that he saw Andrew Levensky and his dog get on an eastbound train. So there probably was a healthy answer to the end of that story. That was 1917, and shortly after that, Michener left, went to New Mexico, once again seeking mineral wealth, and he died there. About 15 years or more later, his daughter came. This is Dorothy Vick, who was a Michener. That's her husband, Joe. They reopened the Michener camp. The guy in the middle here was he's the foreman of the B-Bar K, which is now Lone Mountain Ranch. And the little guy over on the side here is Emmett Crail. Dorothy's oral history, Janet Cronin turned that into a lovely book called Montana's Gallatin Canyon, A Gem in the Treasure State. And that's well worth reading. Well, let's go a little farther south. You know, in 1865, of course, Abraham Lincoln was assassinated. And in his honor, all sorts of things were named Lincoln. And we have in the Taylor Fork, Lincoln Mountain. But Lincoln Mountain has nothing to do with Abraham. It has to do with this guy, English Tom Lincoln. He was a trapper in the Taylor Fork for several decades. He's the one who found No Man Lake, and he called it that because no man in his right mind would go through all that brush to try to find the dumb thing. The stream that comes out of it is now called No Man Creek, but for years it was known as English Tom's Creek. This is a picture of him at age 77. In his later years, he served as a custodian for the Nine Quarter Circle Ranch, and his cabin looked out right across the Taylor Fork at his mountain. Now, as you drive into the Taylor Fork, and those of you who have been down there, right after you get off 191, you go through a kind of a narrow defile, and you're right, on the north side of the river is a big limestone wall. And that's Marble Mountain. Now, we have very little in the way of metamorphic rock at our mountains. And the mountain wasn't named for the rock, for marble. It was named for this guy, Buckskin Charlie Marble. Charlie and his wife Lizzie had a cabin on a bench by a lake up on this mountain. The lake is now pretty much a reed-filled bog, but 150 years ago, it was a good place to have a cabin. It's just a mile or two northeast of Albino Lake, if you've hiked in the Taylor Fork. Anyway, he and Lizzie had their cabin there. Charlie served as a hunting guide and taxidermist. This picture is in his buckskin outfit, and that's how he got his nickname. He took his taxidermy display to the 1893 Chicago World's Fair, and that's how he dressed for it. In later years, he and Lizzie homesteaded just east of Bozeman, and his taxidermy shop sat for many years at 28 West Main here in downtown Bozeman. Anyway, Buckskin Charlie brings me to another story, if you will, that permeates our mountains, and that's the horse thieves. And they say Charlie led some hunts. One of the more famous ones in 1884, he took Teddy Roosevelt on a 40-day hunt through the Taylor Fork and over onto the Madisons. In 1886, he had two clients with him in Horse Thief Basin, and he saw three guys disappear into the woods with a bunch of horses. And the next day, Sheriff Bob Tarter, who was from Blackfoot, Idaho, shows up with a posse and an Indian tracker, and Charlie told him what he'd seen. Charlie and his two clients were deputized. The group of them surrounded the horse thieves. There was a shootout. One got away, but two of them were captured, and all the horses were returned to their rightful owners back in Idaho. You know where Horse Thief Basin is, right? It is no more. Okay, Horse Thief Basin used to be what was called the Upper Madison Basin. It's a wonderful place for the horse thieves because it was really remote. I mean, we're talking about 20 years before West Yellowstone appeared. The next nearest town to the west was Oneida, which was over mountain passes. And the horse thieves could gather the stolen horses from southern Idaho and from Montana, gather them in Horse Thief Basin, and they would then run them north along the Madisons, cross over the Bridgers, And then head to open country in central Montana and run to Canada where they could sell the horses because they weren't under any jurisdiction there. They also would take stolen Canadian horses and come back, sell them in Idaho where mysteriously there happened to be a need for new horses. Anyway, so Horse Thief Bases is no more, and the reason it isn't is because that whole Upper Madison Basin is under the waters of Hebgen Lake. You know who Hebgen was, right? Nobody knows who Hebgen was. This is Max. Max Hebgen was on the board of Montana Power. He was the head of their hydroengineering department. He was responsible for building several of the big dams in western Montana. And he was supervising the construction of the dam on the Madison. He went to Chicago for a business meeting, got sick. It sounds to me like he probably had pneumonia, but he died there. And so in his memory, the dam was named Hebgen Dam, and of course the reservoir of the lake behind it became Hebgen Lake, and the mountain overlooking it was Hebgen Mountain. That's Max. Well, as I said, these are just some pictures for you to look at while I'm blithering, but if you head north along the route that the horse thieves took, coming out of hill guards is a stream, Sun Creek, that flows into the Madison. And on the banks of Sun Creek are the graves of four horse thieves who were killed by Sheriff John Guy of Gallatin County when he caught them down there. John Guy also was responsible for catching Tom Harlow bandits up at Cherry Creek. There was another shootout. Two of the horse thieves were killed. Two were captured and brought to justice in Bozeman. They recovered 18 horses and all of their tack, which were returned to their rightful owners. Now, also as you're heading north along the route of the horse thieves, that's my backyard. But anyway, there's a story. Up by Jack Creek in the woods in a place called the Pothole are the remnants of a corral. And this corral was where the horse thieves hid the horses while they were resting, waiting for the next junction. Farther north, Sam Bostwick, who we're going to meet later, but Sam found another corral deep in the woods on the east side of Flathead Pass. And again, this was used by the horse thieves to rest their horses before they took the run north. On the north end of the Bridger Mountains is Horse Thief Mountain. Same horse thieves, from Horse Thief Basin to Horse Thief Mountain. And it's a little out of the range of what we're looking at, but if you go to Horse Thief Mountain and look east, in the north end of the Crazies is Kid Royal Mountain. Now, Sweetgrass County became a county in 1895, and the first sheriff was a guy by the name of Oscar Falang, and Oscar's goal was to eliminate the nest of horse thieves in the north end of the Shields Valley. And far and away, his biggest nemesis was a guy by the name of Kid Royal, and that's the name of the mountain in the north end of the Crazies, Kid Royal Mountain. And Kid Royal was quite a character. Falang caught him three or four times. He escaped most every time, some really wild, daring escapes. But he finally ended up spending his time in Deer Lodge as he was supposed to. In 1905, the Big Timber Pioneer said, and I'll quote, "Kid Royal was, quote, probably the shrewdest horse thief that Montana has ever known, and who has, no doubt, stolen more horses from this state than any other man." Anyway, that was Kid Royal. Now, so we've had miners, we've had horse thieves. We also need Indians to complete our little history of Montana. This is Fort Ellis in the early days, and of course, Fort Ellis, we use that name because it gave its name to Mount Ellis, which is close to town here. And this is the cavalry. The fellow on the far left out in front is Colonel Brackett, who was the commander of Brackett Creek, which is up by Bridger Bowl, was named for Colonel Brackett. The fort was built and commissioned in 1867 during the Red Cloud War, where the Indians were defeating the U.S. Army in eastern Montana and Wyoming. So with us was to protect us from the Sioux. Now, the fact that the land from Livingston to Billings was Crow country, and the Crow were implacable enemies of the Sioux, probably did more to protect the Gallatin Valley than Fort Ellis, but that's what they were here for. And while they were here, they did a lot of infrastructure. They built the road up Bridger Canyon, put a blockhouse at the north end of Bridger Canyon. Now, the blockhouse was there to protect the canyon from the Indians traversing Flathead Pass. But the Indians that were going across Flathead Pass were western Montana Indians, and they were heading for the Buffalo Plains in the east. And they were looking for food for their winter. And they weren't looking for trouble. And they really didn't give any. The only trouble, in fact, the only real Indian fight in Gallatin County were some Blood Indians who were Blackfeet, a sub-tribe from right on the Canadian border, had come down, stolen some horses west of the Bridgers, and headed east, probably going to where the horse thieves went to head up north through open country. Anyway, Sam Bostwick, who we met earlier, gathered the militia, posse, gang, whatever you want to call it. They called it a militia. They gathered some troops from Fort Ellis, and they actually cornered the Indians, traditionally at Battle Ridge, but it was probably at Battle Mountain up in the Bridgers. There was a big fight. 13 of the Indians were killed and one soldier. And that is the one big Indian fight that we had here in Gallatin County. Well, the fort was decommissioned in 1867. By the way, this is Augustus Van Horn Ellis. He was a colonel of the 127th New York Infantry, fought through several big battles in the Civil War, but he was killed in the Devil's Den at Gettysburg in 1863, and the fort was named in his honor. We do have some other Indian fights. Obviously, this is John Bozeman. John Bozeman was killed a bit east of town, allegedly by the Indians. It may well have been a jealous husband, but the Indians got the blame, and so that's where it is, and the town was named for this man after his death. Tom Michener, who we again mentioned earlier, had a journal, and in his journal he talks about an Indian fight that happened in the Porcupine, which is just east across the river from Lone Peak High School. And in that fight, it was two trappers against the Indian. One Indian and one trapper was killed. The other trapper got away, but we don't, Michener never gave us the names, so we don't know exactly who they were. We do know, however, about this guy. This is Nels Murray. Nels was a trapper. He lived at Murray Creek, which became Buffalo Horn Creek after Sam and Josie Wilson started the Buffalo Horn Ranch. But he preceded them, and he was a trapper. In the early 1880s, he and his brother were down there. They noticed some Indians up at Cinnamon Creek, and Cinnamon Creek is just a mile north, and they decided that those Indians were after their stock, so they snuck up on them one night, shot all the Indians, and dumped their bodies in the Gallatin River. Nels also has the dubious distinction of being the last man to kill an Indian in Gallatin County, and that was in 1889, and he shot the Indian by Jack Smith's cabin. This is Jack Smith. Jack was a Confederate War veteran, came to the Gallatin after the Civil War, and he was known as the Gallatin Guide. He was the first guy to bring cattle into the Middle Fork. He was an assistant game warden in the canyon, and in 1898, he built a bridge across the Gallatin. It was a toll bridge, and he made his money that way. You can see he could afford a very elegant cabin as a result. But that bridge is replaced by a concrete bridge, which is just 2 miles north of Big Sky, and that is known as the Jack Smith Bridge to this day. Considering the fact that they were here for generations, centuries probably before the white man, there are very few Indian names in our mountains. We have this guy, of course. Chief Joseph, the Nez Perce, actually weren't local Indians. They were from Washington. They were fleeing General Howard, trying to get to Canada. And they went across Yellowstone Park. The Hayden survey was done just a couple years after that, and so Hayden named a mountain on the south end of the Gallatin Range. It's in Yellowstone Park, Joseph Mountain, after this fellow. The other Indian name that we have on our mountains just west of West Yellowstone is Targhee Pass, and Chief Targhee was one of the great leaders of the Bannock Indians. The Bannock were a Shoshonean tribe, lived in eastern Idaho, and they were buffalo hunters. And for reasons that we do not know, the buffalo in eastern Idaho all died out, some plague of some sort, and they all died in the 1840s. So for 40 years, the Bannock took what they call the Trail of the Buffalo, and they went from basically the area around Fort Hall, Idaho, across the Madisons, across the Gallatins, around the Beartooth, and out into the eastern Buffalo Plains where they hunted for their winter food. Chief Targhee was actually killed by Indians in those Buffalo Plains. The other thing we have are remnants of some of the Indians. There were no permanent Indians in the Gallatin Canyon, none in the Bridgers or the Gallatin Mountains either. But they did pass through, and these are wikiups. This was taken not too long ago at Wigwam Creek, which is just north of Yellowstone Park. Wikiups were a temporary structure. They piled these sticks together. They would cover them with brush or robes and use it as a temporary shelter. When they left the stick piles like that, and several of them are still hanging around in the area, although it's getting old and they're starting to fall down. But let's go on to some other interesting people. This is Hiram and Emmeline Stone, and they came to Montana in 1867 1865, and they were going for the Goldfields, an immigrant. They settled in what was the Cinnabar Triangle in the northern end of Yellowstone Park. It wasn't part of the park at that time. And when the Nez Perce and Chief Joseph came across the park, there was a gunfight there, and the Stones Ranch was burned to the ground. So they left that part of the world and came to Bozeman. Emmeline has the interesting distinction of being the first woman tourist in Yellowstone Park. She and Hiram and a bunch of other people took a wagon train ride through the park, lasted a month, and she was reportedly the first woman to do so. Their son, Howard Stone, had a sawmill in the Bridgers on what is called Stone Creek. Now, one name for the rocks in the creek. It was named for the stones. The sawmill was not particularly profitable. Howard and his wife left for Butte in 1897. But Stone Creek remained in the news, I guess, because during Prohibition, of course, the Bridgers were a relatively remote part of the world, and so they were full of stills, and there were a couple of stills on Stone Creek. And two of the moonshiners got into a fight, and so the newspapers got to report how one of the moonshiners shot his buddy, and that put Stone Creek back on the map. Well, this kind of gets me to some of the stories, some of the fun things that happened in our mountains. In Big Sky, there's a Moonlight Creek, and it was named for a hunting camp, Moonlight Camp, where Jake Ullery reputedly shot a big elk by the moonlight. And the creek was named for that, and of course now the development took its name from that creek. But there is another Moonlight Creek that flows north into Hebgen Lake. Now, that's where Horse Thief Basin was. As I said, that was a very remote part of the world. So during Prohibition, it was a wonderful place to brew your hooch. And the woods and streams around West Yellowstone were just full of stills. That creek was originally called Moonshine Creek because of all the stills along the bank. But there was a assistant superintendent of the Forest Service called C.P. Swim back then, and he thought that Moonshine Creek was an inappropriate name. Quite an upright fellow, so he renamed it Moonlight Creek. But there was a lot of moonshine going on in West Yellowstone. The Eagle brothers wrote a history of West Yellowstone in 1976, and they reported that back during Prohibition, the Short Line Railway used to bring sacks of cracked corn as feed for the stock. And that was at West Yellowstone in the winter. West Yellowstone in the winter, the snow was up to here. There were no stock in town. They all wintered at a much lower elevation. It's not clear what all that cracked corn was for. Now, you can think what you want. I personally think the more innocent view is that there were some Southerners who really liked their grits. And but anyway, another remnant of the stills around West Yellowstone, there's a spring not far from town called Whiskey Springs, where they use the water for their making their whiskey. It's sort of ironic that Whiskey Springs now is the main source of water for Yellowstone Springs bottled water, and it is also the main source of water for the town of West Yellowstone. Well, you guys also know this guy. This is Albert Greek. Now, Albert, he was no way Greek. He was a Scotsman. The legend is that he was a physician trained in Edinburgh, and he came to the Upper Gallatin because of, I believe the term was, unrequited love. Now, I'm a physician, and I happen to know that in 1870, the University of Edinburgh was probably the most famous medical school in the world. And if you had a medical degree from the University of Edinburgh, you were guaranteed social and economic success. I have no proof, but I suspect that unrequited love was a Victorian euphemism for what was called, when I grew up, being in a family way. And I don't think that it was sadness that brought Albert Greek to the Upper Gallatin. I think he was hiding out from angry brothers, is what I think. Anyway, he had the sawmill and a cabin right there at where the campground is now. He worked for about 70 years, sold the lumber to Zachariah Sales from Salesville. And then at the end of about a decade, he sold to Lou Bartholomew and disappeared from history. Now, Lou Bartholomew, I could spend an evening telling stories about Lou Bart. I mean, he was quite the character. He's the guy who built the two cabins that became twin cabins, the trailhead that's behind the Rainbow Ranch right now. The cabins are gone. He lost them because he didn't prove up. Interestingly, the reason he didn't prove up is he spent 2 years fighting in the Spanish-American War, and when he came back, somebody had already claimed his cabins. So Lou stayed in the canyon for about another 3 decades, never homesteaded, never settled down. He was always squatting in one cabin or another. My favorite story about him, the man was huge. I mean, he makes me look like a dwarf. And he had a habit, he had his favorite bathtub. And he would carry that bathtub on his back, on foot, from one squatted cabin to the next. And he was quite proud of his bathtub. One day he was at a cabin down by Bacon Ranch Creek, which, by the way, at that time was not part of the park. That was annexed in 1929. But he was at the cabin by Bacon Ranch, and he looked up on a ridge, and it looked like there were some loose boulders up there, and that wasn't very safe. So he hiked up on the ridge and checked it out, and sure enough, there were some loose boulders. So he was testing it, and he kind of pushed one. Whoa, it was loose. Falls off the cliff, down the hill, poof, through the cabin, and destroyed his precious bathtub. So that was Lou Bart. The last kind of humorous place I want to tell you about is Bad Luck Creek. Now, this is Albino Lake, but you can see way over on the left are the Taylor Hill Guards. And coming out of the Hill Guards towards the Madison River is Bad Luck Creek. I spent months trying to figure out what Bad Luck was all about, and I thought, first, well, it's Montana. It must be a miner. He probably spent a year up there, you know, digging glory holes and coming up dry. Bad luck. That wasn't it. So Montana must have been a homesteader, you know, and he had his family up there, and he was trying dry land farming. Got wiped out by the drought. Bad luck. Yeah, that wasn't it either. I found this story in the little museum just outside of Venice, and it turns out that a cowboy was range riding down there between Wolf and Moose Creek. And it was late in the afternoon, and he spotted a grouse. And you know how the grouse, they'll kind of lead you away from the nest. They gobble, 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 and waddle, waddle, waddle away. So he got off the horse and picked up a rock, figuring he's going to have a nice grouse for dinner. And he flung the rock at the grouse. Unfortunately, the grouse had kind of headed off towards the horse. Now, horses do not like having rocks thrown at them. So the horse bolted and ran off. And the cowboy had to walk several miles back to camp. So his buddies back at camp called it Bad Luck Creek. Okay, let's get to some more people. This is John Rees. John Rees was a Welshman. He was converted to the LDS faith by a Mormon missionary in Wales. He emigrated to the U.S. He settled with the Mormon colony in Missouri, and then went to Salt Lake City with Brigham Young. Now, while he was in Missouri, he became a follower of Young Joseph Smith, otherwise known as the Young Prophet. And those people were called Josephites. And when he got to Salt Lake City, Brigham Young was not happy with these schismatics. It was not a good place to be, so he and his wife and several other of the Josephites left. He settled in 1864. He settled north of what is now Bozeman on Rees Creek. And Rees Creek comes out of the Bridgers south towards Bozeman. There are two tributaries of that, Evan Rees Creek and Tom Rees Creek, who were two of his five sons. They were a very large and successful family, very active in the town of Clements up there, and have left many descendants in the area. There's another Josephite who settled a little bit west of John Rees, and that was Melvin Ross. Melvin Ross, when he set up his homestead, climbed the peak behind the homestead and planted the American flag, and that's why we now have Ross Peak. Well, some other guys that were in the area, and I'm sure you know this, Sipes Canyon. This was L.J. Sipes. He had a homestead by the canyon. This is Arthur Truman. Arthur Truman was a Civil War vet. He came in 1869, settled just outside of Truman Gulch. He was a state legislator. He was on the school board. He was the postmaster and quite an important active man in the community. And now I want to get to my favorite pioneer, and that's this guy. There's a mountain in the north end of the Bridgers called Zade Mountain, and I can't tell you how many hours I spent searching through files trying to find somebody with a surname Zade, and he doesn't exist because it was his first name. Actually, it was his nickname. But Cindy had the bright idea of using Facebook and social media to try to find out about some of our mysteries. And so you may have, if you follow the Gallatin History Museum website or Facebook site, you will remember some of the mystery sleuths that appeared. And one of them wondered about Zade Mountain. Well, he has a lot of descendants here in the area, and they just came out of the woodwork. And our Facebook page was filled with comments from these people. And one of them, Mary Lee Langor, brought us this picture, and that picture is now in the files, in the digital files of the museum. Zade Morgan came to Montana in 1880. Interestingly, he's the only pioneer that I know of that came by train. Everybody else came by wagon train. Now, in 1880, the Northern Pacific didn't go all the way to Bozeman, but he got into eastern Montana, and he only had to take horse-drawn conveyance from eastern Montana to Bozeman. He was here from 1880 to 1890, went to White Sulphur Springs for 10 years, back to Bozeman. He was a county commissioner here, and he was particularly noted for his enthusiasm for telephone lines. Now, not all of our names have to be old pioneers. We have some younger people, too. On the left is Lee Metcalf, and of course, you know, Lee was a young man from Stevensville. He then ran for the Western District Congress, congressman, and he served from 1953 to 61. He served then in the Senate from 61 till his death in 78, And Lee Metcalf was president pro tem of the Senate, and he used that position to shepherd the Wilderness Bill through Congress. And for his work and after his death, the Lee Metcalf Wilderness in the Madisons was named for him. And the fellow right behind me here is Don Nutter. He was elected governor of Montana at the same time that that Metcalf went to the Senate, but he only served for a little over a year because he was in a plane in the winter of 1962, got caught in a blizzard. The reported wind speeds were over 100 miles an hour, sheared the wing off the plane, and everybody in the plane was killed. In the South Madisons, there's a cathedral peak that is now known as Nutter's Cathedral Peak. We have even younger people, newer people. On my right is Alex Lowe. Now, that picture was pirated out of Outside Magazine, but Outside Magazine named him as the greatest climber in the world. He unfortunately was killed in an avalanche in 1999 in the Himalayas. There's a mountain in the North Gallatins called Alex Lowe Peak. Alex was given credit for doing the first winter descent of the North Couloir on that peak. And in 2005, the Board of Geographic Names confirmed that that was indeed Alex Lowe Peak. On the far right is Alex Diekman. That's his obituary picture from the Chronicle. Alex Diekman came to Montana. He was a senior project manager for the Trust of Public Lands. He was responsible for getting conservation easements on thousands of acres. There's a unnamed peak in the western side of the Madison Range that overlooks the Taylor Fork and the Madison Valley, some of the lands that he helped conserve. And just this year, in January, that was confirmed as Alex Lowe Peak with a signature from President Trump. So those are some of the stories that I have. I would tell you, this is a list of my mysteries. These are lakes, streams, and mountains where I don't have the source. If any of you have any idea about these, let us know. My email is up there, drjeffmontana@gmail.com, or you can get a hold of Cindy, director at thegallatinhistorymuseum.org, or if you know about something, just stop by the museum and tell one of the staff. We'd love to hear from you, and it doesn't have to be just the mysteries. I mean, I'd love to know about those. But if you have stories, if you have anecdotes, if you have information about any of the features in the Gallatin National Forest in Bozeman's backyard, we'd love to enrich the stories. We'd love to fill out some of the stories. So stop by and let us know. We'd appreciate it. Now we have time for a few questions, right?
Spanish Peaks and Storm Castle. Do you know any back?
Well, yes. Storm Castle, of course, was named because of the shape. The Spanish Peaks comes from a Crow Indian name. It is the in Crow, and it's a translation of the Crow, but the Crow word means the place where the Spanish were. And there were some Mexican trappers up there, I believe it was around 1830. I'd have to look in my notes, but it was quite a long time ago, and that's where it comes from.
Tumbledown Lake in the Taylor Fork. Tumbledown Lake in the
Taylor Fork. Oh, it's Tumbledown Creek, yeah.
Creek.
Yeah, it comes down into the, and if you've hiked up it, you know why it's called Tumbledown, because it's just a series of little cascades. And it's a descriptive name. Imp Peak. Oh, well, Imp Peak is in the Hill Guards, and it has two little points off to the side that look like little pointy ears. So that's why it's called Imp Peak. Nearby, there's a Gnome, G-N-O-M-E. I think that's also because of the, it's a world traveler with a red hat. But,
he shows up everywhere.
But again, that's a descriptive name.
Tobacco root?
That's the tobacco roots isn't in what we're talking about because it's on the west side of the Madison River. But the tobacco root mountains are named for a plant, and it's Valerian hastata. Okay? Now, valerian is a very common plant in the mountains, and it's got a white umbelliferous flower. Its cousin is the tobacco root, which has got kind of a scraggly panicle of little brown flowers. But the Indians used it to dry the root and smoke it. And but that's an actual plant. You can look that up. Actually, the best book is Sheeman's book of wildflowers of Montana. And you can get that at any of the bookstores. But that, but yeah, look up tobacco root or Valerian hastata.
Any features named for women?
Well, you can see all of these women. You know, Lillian up, I wish I had my little thing, but Lillian up here is interesting. We put that out in one of our sleuth alerts and got an answer back, because Lillian Lake is up above Hellroaring. And a guy brought back, gave me pictures of Lillian, and interestingly, there's a Lillian Lake at the headwaters of Hellroaring Creek, which is the headwaters of the Jefferson River in the Centennial Mountains. Our Lillian Lake is at the head of Hellroaring Creek that comes down out of the Madisons into the Gallatin River.
So kind of
an interesting, but yeah, there's lots of names, and I don't know where all of them came from. I would love to know. Now, Ramona Lake, the fourth one down there, that's interesting, because the USGS has a variant name that can be used, and it's Raymond Lake.
Oh.
Raymond and Ramona. I mean, I'm not sure if one of our cowboys was cross-dressing or what was going on back when that was named. But no, we don't know what those are. There were some lakes, and I've actually been able to find those through the Forest Service notes, that were named for rangers' girlfriends. We have no documented evidence that naming a lake after your girlfriend has any help in success in wooing, but they did use their girlfriends for some of the names. And, of course, there are wives and mothers and stuff. But.
Does anybody else find it fascinating, though, that women only get water? We don't get any, like, mountains or peaks or anything.
Well, did you notice that all the pioneers... I did have a picture of Emmeline Stone. It's the only woman I had. There are a couple other women, but...
Huh? Sacagawea Peak.
Sacagawea... Well, of course, Sacagawea Peak was actually named for the woman who was on the Lewis and Clark expedition. I'm not sure why...
At least we got a peak.
Huh?
At least we got a peak.
I'm not sure why they put it there. She never was in this part of the country. Did Sacagawea come with William Clark?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so she did pass by then.
Yep.
There's a peak right near it called Nayanuki, and that comes from a children's book called Nayanuki, and I think she runs or something like that. Anyway, it's a fictional story, but she was Sacagawea's friend, and it's a children's book. And there was a group of children in school, I believe in Belgrade, children of the pioneers, and they asked that it be named Nayanuki Peak for that character in that book. And the USGS accepted that.